Survivor Weekly. But Wave Farm is also a transmission arts organization, which, don't listen to me blab about what a transmission arts organization is. Listen to that episode, episode one, number 193 there on Radio Survivor, the most recent episode before this one on the podcast feed. And you can find those either where you get your podcasts or on the website, radiosurvivor.com/podcast. And we talked all about transmission arts, and that was a really fun episode. Before that, on episode number 192, we spoke with two of the leaders, two members of the Radio Preservation Task Force, which is a project of the Library of Congress, which has also been a major theme of Radio Survivor in the last couple years, preserving the sounds of radio, the archives of what radio has.
This is Joe Callis, formerly of the Human League and the Rizzillos, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
This is Rob Sapper, host of Overlooked, WGXC's excursion into underheard and overlooked music. Overlooked is now on fourth Tuesday of each month from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. Each show is themed, connecting disparate types of music in new and uncharted ways. That's Overlooked, 12 to 2 on Tuesdays.
This is If you are hungry or just want to help community radio, come on out on Thursday, May 25th to Left Bank Ciders in Catskill to their community soup night. WGXC is organizing this night, Thursday, May 25th, with a live on-site broadcast, DJs, and soup. Come on out for a bowl of soup, conversation, and some music. Each Thursday night, Left Bank Ciders hosts a community soup night where volunteers make soup with proceeds benefiting a local nonprofit. All proceeds go to Waveforms WGXC 90.7 FM. On Thursday, May 25th, the Left Bank Ciders in Catskill from 5 to 7 p.m.
Are you tired of your flying saucer always breaking down on your way to Mars?
Wish you could get more bang for your whoopee at the gas pump?
Well, here at Flying Saucer Mart, we have the perfect flying saucer for you.
It goes as fast as light. It comes in a variety of colors and only costs you 75 whoopee.
Come down to 375 Bionic Ave in Pluto City and fly home with a new used flying saucer today.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Willa Kay of West Shokan, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
A radio network, an empire upon an empire.
I make no promises.
You on the mark.
With one purpose only, to point out and make public the dishonesty. Now in complete control of the government of this state.
There is only one man who can rid the politics of this state of the evil domination.
Hello.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Mid-Hudson News reports that seven men have come forth to say they were paid to act as homeless veterans displaced from upstate hotels by incoming immigrants. Men were staying at a homeless shelter in Poughkeepsie and said they were among 15 men recruited for the scam by the nonprofit Yit Foundation. They were told to pretend they were veterans that had been kicked out of the Crossroads Hotel in the town of Newburgh last week before the arrival of actual migrants bused there from New York City. Assemblyperson Brian Mahar now says he was duped by Yit Foundation's director, Sharon Tony Finch, who appears to have fabricated the entire story. Mayor said on May 19th, and I quote, "When Sharon and several veterans explained to me their situation, I believed them at their word. I had absolutely no knowledge of any wrongdoing and believed that their stories were real until a phone conversation with Sharon yesterday afternoon when she explained to me that this did not happen the way she purported it to," end quote. The men said they were paid $200 and given food and alcohol to scam the public into believing that homeless veterans were being kicked out of shelters to make room for migrants. One of the homeless men said about Sharon Tony Finch, and I quote, "She told us to act like we were the veterans that had been displaced. She told us that if asked, we were supposed to say we had been kicked out and Sharon found us rooms in Fishkill," end quote. The man also said that anyone in the group who was unwilling to answer was told to respond with, and I quote, "I'm too traumatized to talk about it," end quote. The false story that migrants were displacing homeless veterans was repeated widely both locally and nationally. Read the full story at Mid-Hudson News. Nick Reisman reports in New York State of Politics that during the COVID-19 pandemic, New York State officials made it easier for people to receive an absentee ballot, and advocates for open government would like that to continue. Blair Horner of the New York Public Interest Research Group said, and I quote, lawmakers would have to act on legislation to extend that this year. They haven't done it yet, and the primary election is merely 6 weeks away, end quote. Primary voting this year takes place June 17th through June 27th. Common Causes Susan Lerner agrees it should be easy for a voter to receive an absentee ballot because they do not want to be in a small room with so many other people for health reasons. And I quote, this isn't about some special favor. This is a reasonable definition in our unfortunately highly contagious world that would be relevant, for instance, if you're a cancer patient under chemotherapy. It would be relevant if you're immune compromised. It would be relevant if you're an older person at risk of COVID, end quote. Republicans such as State Senator Mark Walczak are opposed, saying, and I quote, we should be doing things to restore faith in the electoral process and get people out on Election Day, end quote. But there is no longer one single Election Day, but many days when voters may cast a ballot at the polls. Locally, Republicans in Rensselaer County have been charged with fraud about absentee ballots, but otherwise there have been no problems with absentee voting lately. Read more about this story in New York State of Politics. Scott Stafford reports for the Berkshire Eagle that locally allergy expert Dr. Jasdeep S. Badwal says that, and I quote, this spring has been particularly bad, end quote, for allergies. The specialist at Berkshire Allergy Care on South Street in Pittsfield said, and I quote, and climate change is not helping. We are in the thick of it, end quote. The forecast of pollen count from pollen.com predicts that to remain the case this week. Carrie Nardou, professor of climate and population studies and chair of the Department of Environmental Health at Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, said that pollen seasons are starting earlier and lasting longer. With more carbon dioxide in the air, plants release more pollen. Over-the-counter allergy medicines just mask symptoms, and only a series of shots can actually help those suffering. Badwal said, and I quote, these allergy symptoms can have a heavy impact on someone's quality of life, but a lot of people don't know that shots are available, end quote. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle. And that wraps up the WGXE News Update. You can visit our website at WGXE.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. While you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXE sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXE newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Hiroshima's nuclear lesson: the G7 must push for peace in Ukraine. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. President Joe Biden's attending this year's G7 summit. With Russia's war in Ukraine and President Vladimir Putin's threats to use nuclear weapons there at the top of the agenda. The G7 comprises Japan, Italy, Canada, France, the U.S., the U.K., and Germany. Russia was briefly a member of what was then the G8, but was expelled in 2014 after its military annexation of Crimea. This year's G7 meeting is being held in Japan. Of particular note is where in Japan? Hiroshima. There, on August 6, 1945, the United States dropped the world's first atomic bomb, leveling the city and killing an estimated 140,000 people and injuring 100,000 more. As the threat of nuclear war looms as a real possibility, the world leaders gathered in Hiroshima have a responsibility to reflect on the obliteration of that city almost 80 years ago and to say no to nuclear war.
I want them, the G7 leaders, to seriously acknowledge the inhumanity of nuclear weapons. These are weapons that can destroy humankind.
85-year-old Teruko Yahata, a survivor of the Hiroshima atomic bomb, speaking this week.
I want them to strongly feel that these are terrible things and that they have to be abolished.
Prime Minister Fumio Kishida's family is also from Hiroshima, and a number of his relatives perished in the atomic blast. Survivors of the Hiroshima bomb and the one dropped on Nagasaki 3 days later on August 9, 1945, are referred to in Japanese as hibakusha. They've been joined in their call for nuclear abolition by the Nobel Peace Prize-winning International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons. ICAN is demanding the G7 leaders condemn any and all threats to use nuclear weapons, recognize the catastrophic humanitarian consequences of nuclear war, remove nuclear weapons from non-nuclear states, demand it also of Russia, which plans to place nuclear arms in Belarus, and to join the UN Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. The United States and Russia, along with the seven other nuclear-armed states, China, the UK, France, India, Pakistan, North Korea, and Israel, refused to sign the treaty. A group of military and national security professionals just published a full-page open letter to President Biden in the New York Times under the headline, "The U.S. Should Be a Force for Peace in the World." Its 15 signatories include a retired U.S. Army Major General, President Ronald Reagan's ambassador to the Soviet Union, and Dennis Fritz, a retired Command Chief Master Sergeant of the U.S. Air Force. He's the director of the Eisenhower Media Network, which organized the letter.
I've been in and out of the Pentagon since the age of 22. Now I am now 66 years old. The majority of my life has been in and out of the Pentagon. And this is probably the most fearful I've ever been with a nuclear escalation.
Chief Fritz said on the Democracy Now! NewsHour,
and so I take their threat of not taking off their plate the use of nuclear weapons, I take that seriously. And so that is why, once again, we thought it was so important for us to send that open letter out to the president. And so our hope is to educate the American public so that they could see how we got to this point.
Another former national security advisor and military veteran is sounding alarm bells as well. Daniel Ellsberg, the legendary whistleblower who released the Pentagon Papers in 1971, revealing the secret history of U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War and the lies of presidential administrations from Presidents Eisenhower through Johnson that supported the U.S. military escalation there. Earlier in his career, Ellsberg was deeply involved in developing the U.S. military's plans for nuclear war. His book, The Doomsday Machine, Confessions of a Nuclear War Planner, should be required reading. One of his greatest concerns was the dominant belief among war planners at the time that the U.S. would fare better in a nuclear war by initiating a first strike.
The belief that we can do less bad by striking first than if we strike second is what confronts us in Ukraine with a real possibility of a nuclear war coming out of this conflict.
Dan Ellsberg said recently on Democracy Now!
In other words, of most life on Earth, not all, most life on Earth being extinguished as a matter of the control of Crimea or the Donbas or Taiwan. That's insane.
Ellsberg, now 92 years old, was recently diagnosed with inoperable pancreatic cancer. He remains tireless in warning the public of the risk of nuclear annihilation. In March, he wrote, "All the young activists rising up give me hope as I leave my life. As the movement against the Vietnam War showed, young people can save lives when they make their care known in action. Keep going. The world is in your hands," he said. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the weekend. Well, on Saturday, showers are likely, mainly after 2 p.m. It will be cloudy with a temperature high near 65 degrees and a south wind at 7 to 9 miles per hour. On Saturday night, showers are likely and possibly a thunderstorm. It will be cloudy, then gradually becoming partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 51 degrees and a south wind at 7 miles per hour, becoming west after midnight. And on Sunday, mostly sunny, with a high near 72 degrees. And on Sunday night, mostly clear, with a temperature low of around 49 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, in Greene and Columbia counties.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Edelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXC has a new call-in number for anyone to leave a three-minute message that we will play back on the air. Listeners can leave as many three-minute audio letters to the editor at 518-212-7509 as they want, and WGXC will let your voice be heard on the local airwaves. The number again to call in and record a three-minute message that will be played back on 90.7 FM is 518-212-7509.
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Acre, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves. Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still, following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit mohican.com.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Hands-on, listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Mama.
Next, we tune in the latest episode of the I Have Seen Niagara radio theater show from G. Lucas Crane and Rick Royer. The show airs Saturday mornings on the WGXC Morning Show between 9 and 10 a.m. and every early Wednesday night just after midnight.
This is the best rib sub I have ever had. A woman yells to no one in particular at Devil's Hole Pizza and Ribs. We've even had barbecue in Louisiana, and it's not as good as this, she utters into the void. Her husband looks down, half-heartedly poking at the few remaining baked beans scattered below. His stomach is not so full that he can't swallow the first response that comes to mind. Sweetheart, we've never been to Louisiana. We've never even been outside of Niagara County in all of our 55 years together. This, he does not say. It's just too much trouble, so he says nothing. He just thinks about how it's getting worse. She is being lost to time. And he feels there is little he can do but watch the decline. But even though she is not the same woman he once knew, he has learned after all these years that he will love her no matter what. Love was out of his control. So he carries on, poking at the beans on his plate, which overlaps with her plate, since the table that they're sitting on is much too small for two people. But it's the only table at this establishment, usually used by people waiting for their takeout orders. The presence of other people sitting here eating takes Zach El Kiba by surprise when he enters. This doesn't seem like the kind of place for dining in. He stutter steps as he walks past their table, thinks of saying something but he doesn't, too awkward. So he breezes up to the counter and addresses the hole in the wall, underneath the sign that says, Place Order Here.
Hey buddy, you back there?
Remember me? I was here yesterday.
I'm only in town one more night.
Food was amazing.
Loved it.
Gotta get me some more before I head out of town.
A large, shadowy figure in the back of the kitchen says nothing. So Zach just places his takeout order. Half rack of ribs, coleslaw, baked beans, slice of buffalo chicken pizza, a loganberry, and two dipping sauces, spicy barbecue, and creamy horseradish. As he waits, the old man stares at him, transfixed. His attention is not at all seized by jealousy, he tells himself, just curiosity. He wonders what his story is, this young, beautiful man with pointy boots and a backwards newsboy cap. He decides he must be gay, from a big city, or both. If he's rich, he does resent him a little. And if he's not rich, the guy must be up to no good. But no, not jealous at all. Zach's order is ready. A grocery-sized paper bag dangles from a meaty hand sticking out of the hole in the wall. Zach grabs the bag, puts a wad of cash in the hand, keep the change. He sets the bag of styrofoam containers in the passenger seat of his Mazda Miata and heads to his motel. Devil's Hole remains behind, a quiet diorama behind glass, with an old couple sitting there underneath fluorescent lights at a much too small table. The woman is talking, but her husband is too deep in thought. Nothing is registering in his brain. He just nods and gets smaller in the distance as it all slowly disappears into a different plot. Hospital corners. That's the secret to a well-made bed. And the maid working on room 33 cranks them out like a machine.
Position a flat sheet. A flat sheet is a sheet.
Bottom sheet corners tucked, crisp under mattress, not a wrinkle. Top corner folded, 45 degrees, hanging, tucked, clean, smooth the edge. The maid looks just as tidy and crisp as the beds she makes. She's like a maid from a different era. Fully starched uniform of black dress, white buttons, and lace apron at the waist. But before she is done cleaning room 33, its guest has arrived. It's Zach, rolling his sports car into the spot in front of the room marked with a 33 in yellow paint. A pampered, sparkling motorcycle is the only other vehicle in the parking lot. He sees that the door to his room is open. Then he sees the maid emerge while tying off a bag of garbage. Confused, he calls to her. Hey, this is my room. I'm still here another night. Yes, I'm sorry, she replies. We just figured you might like some nice, fresh bedding and a tidying up. I'll only be another minute. Kind of strange to be cleaning a room when the guest hasn't requested it, right? Especially at 8 p.m., he asks. She just smiles and goes right back to cleaning the room. He watches her work, struck by her elegance and long, sharp form.
I guess I can wait.
He sets his bag of food on the hood and gets a head start on dinner by popping open one of his to-go boxes and taking a few bites of pizza. He peers into the room through the open door as he chews, hardly taking an eye off the contours of the maid as she maneuvers around the bed. She gathers her supply onto a small cart and then takes one last step back to inspect, or perhaps admire, her work. A perfectly made bed, not a crumb on the floor or out of place, and this is how she always sets a room, left without a history of guests. All yours, she says, as she pushes the cart past him.
Enjoy your stay at the Cascade Motel.
He gloms a few more leers at the restrained way her tight dress shapes her exit. A pervert's grin flashes across his face, and then he heads into the room. He is immediately struck by how immaculately clean it is, and bright, freakishly bright white. White blanket, white sheets, white pillows, white table and chairs and walls. He notices one new feature as well. The drab orange curtains have been replaced with delicate bands of white lace. His deep red barbecue ribs scream as they enter this virginal chamber. He wastes no time in rearranging the maid's work by setting up an emergency dinner area. Pulls up a table next to the bed, sets the phone and the lamp from the table onto the floor next to him, pulls a second chair over on which to rest excessive styrofoam containers. The ribs look garish and crystalline. He eats them like an animal without napkins, it occurs to him. The shadow at Devil's Hole forgot to give him napkins. Jesus, he whispers to himself. Barbecue ribs and no fucking napkins. He looks around, then heads to the bathroom to grab two clean white lace trim washcloths. He sets the beans and the coleslaw on the chair, the ribs, loganberry, half slice of pizza and sauces on the side table, and he sits facing it all from the edge of the bed. A drip of spicy barbecue dip drops onto the side of the white bed. Loganberry seeps from the improperly closed lid onto the white rug. The red drenched washcloths rub a tint against the white walls they're sitting against. After he finishes as much as he can, he stuffs the empty containers into a garbage can that seems smaller than the garbage he's trying to fit into it. The aftermath of his meal has left a devastating smell in the air. He is too much a part of it to notice it, but he does notice the TV. He normally doesn't watch TV, but whenever he's in a motel, he's compelled to at least turn it on, flip through it a bit, and then usually turn it right back off. He finds the remote velcroed to the top of the TV. He turns it on, but there's just a thin white line across the black screen. No sound. He flips through, all the same. He gives up without much of a fight, just leaving the TV hanging there with the white line on its screen. He can hear the TV from the room next door, though, and it makes him envious. The walls of this motel are paper thin, so without any straining, he can tell that the guest in room 34 is watching some sensational show about animal attacks. A chimp mauls his owners at a birthday party.
I had no idea a chimpanzee was capable of doing that to a human. He got all my fingers on each hand, gouged out my left eye, and bit my rear end so deep that it damaged my sciatic nerve. That's why I can't walk. He also got my wife's thumb, took that, I was kicking at it from my...
He wants to watch TV like the guy in room 34.
Worst birthday ever.
But instead, he just digests and stares ahead at the bright white wall. His ears pick up the clacking sound of high heels in the distance. They are coming closer, louder. They seem to slow down right outside of his door, then stop. Whoever it is, she's right on the other side of his door. He sits up, alert. But then the footsteps start up again and stop just a few feet away. And there's a knock on the door next to him, room 34. The door opens. Zach puts his ear to the wall, and he can hear voices in the next room, crystal clear, as if it were his own.
Hi, can I help you?
The guest in room 34 answers the door in his t-shirt and sweatpants. He's in his mid-50s, rugged and sleepy, and completely surprised to open the door to find a beautiful lady on the other side of it. She's dressed for a night out, yet carrying a large box. Makeup, pumps, and a big stupid cardboard box that she needs both arms outstretched to carry. Hey, how's your night going? Is that your motorcycle? She asks. Yes, it is. Do I know you? Yes, of course I do. I do. Nah, we've never met. I'm just from around the area, she says. I stop by the motel sometimes to sell some merchandise and just get to know folks. And I saw your handsome motorcycle and thought, gee, I'd really like to see who this fella is. She tells him her name is Nicole. Tonight she is selling decorative hourglasses. Cheap-looking things made of bright-colored plastic, filled with white sand that falls on a tiny replica of Niagara Falls. Part hourglass, part snow globe, all tchotchke.
You're going door to door at night, selling hourglasses?
Well, the wagon wheel. You know, the bar. It's right nearby, and I move a lot of product there, so I always figure to stop here afterwards to see if any out-of-towners might want a souvenir.
Their conversation is brief. She never even sits. But they cover a lot of ground in the short period of time. The guest in room 34 has clearly been yearning for human contact. He instantly opened up about his recent divorce, his early retirement due to a spinal injury, how he can't ride his motorcycle for too long because of his back, but he still likes to ride it when he can. He lives a little over an hour away in Rochester. He just wanted to get away, see the falls, and try his luck at the casino. He's been feeling lonely lately, he tells her that. Just good to get out. Even as he spilled all this to her, in the back of his mind, he was puzzled by this random woman standing in his tiny motel room. Do you like them? She inquires.
Sure, but it's very odd.
No doubt about it. Very odd.
Is there anything else I can offer you tonight?
He pauses. Too many things go through his head. He takes a good look at her, trying to decode her intentions. And he suddenly senses something strange about her. Makes his skin crawl. There's a dead look in her eyes. Completely disconnected from the sparkle of her smile.
No, I'm fine. I'll take one. An hourglass. Just an hourglass. How much?
Oh, okay, an hourglass then. Here, then how about this one? It's so you. Just $8. He quickly pushes a $10 bill towards her and goes quiet. Are you sure there's nothing else I can interest you in tonight, sweetie? He says no, and she packs her box to leave. But before she does, she turns to him. Well, enjoy your stay. Oh, and these hourglasses, by the way? The sands only fall in one direction. You'll see. Back in room 33, Zach hears every word of this, standing with his face to the wall. After he heard her leave room 34, he excitedly hoped his door was next. He is curious about those additional services. Zach L. Keebaugh is a party boy, and his appetite for adventure is even higher than his appetite for a good rack of ribs. He waits, but she walks right by his door. He hears her heels walking through the parking lot. He pulls the lace curtain aside and sees her sashaying away. Without hesitation, he pops open his door, looks to his left, and then hurries after her. Hey, excuse me, excuse me. She stops, but doesn't turn around. You're the hourglass lady, aren't you? I'll take one. I'll take whatever you're offering. Sorry, buddy, but I just sold the last one, she says, and then flings the empty box onto a pile of abandoned mattresses.
But I have more back at my place if you'd like to follow me there.
Hell yeah.
She leads him out of the parking lot and across the street. They traverse a field and walk across the baseball diamond at Hyde Park. Through the brush they go at the edge of the outfield, where she disappears into a dense stand of shrubs and briars. Looking ahead for her, he can't see her, but he can hear her giggle, and he can sense that she's close. The thicket didn't look very dense to him at first, but now that he's entered it, it feels like a jungle. Absolute darkness surrounds him. He hears nothing but the rustling of branches and the sound of her breath. She feels near. He reaches out and cannot feel her. She beckons. This way, the voice, modulating, breaking. Her but not her. But he can't stop following. The air he gulps is getting thicker and moist. The blackness turns to swirls of purple and dark blue, unfolding in around him as the ornate plumage. There is a sense of euphoria with every inhalation. She laughs. He sees her face. Her body is formless. He moves forward, but not on his own. He slides along more down than across. Strange, but he feels a smile on his face, hot blood on his lips. Blinding flashes of a chimpanzee hacking at him, his big white teeth glinting in shards of moonlight. Zack sees himself being ripped apart, but only feels pleasure. The branches are decorated with his limbs. He caresses the chimp's face, the struggle, mouth to mouth, and limb to limb to limb. Suddenly, all sounds deafening. The chimp shrieks. Nicole belches a deep, baleful laugh and grows, and spreads two legs made of trees, from which a corpse, mummified in lace, emerges.
Come with us forever, party boy.
His spirit descends into a pit in the earth. His severed head licks his lips. His eyes have never seen so clearly. He felt so good he couldn't feel a thing. I can't wait for you to take my place, he hears sung, echoing as if from a distant bathtub or light bulb. His body is in shreds. His mind is a mere sliver until it was completely swallowed by something beyond death. Worlds away. A baseball diamond sits, sparingly used, bored as dirt. Back at the motel, the guest in room 34 goes out for a smoke. He notices a maid making up the bed, although the Mazda is still parked in the spot for room 33. The room is so clean it almost glows. But it's after 10 p.m. Why is she making up a room at this hour? None of my business, he tells himself. He takes a couple more deep sucks on his cigarette and looks as far as he can into the distance. He goes back into his room and shuts the door. The sand has emptied to the bottom of the hourglass, so he flips it over. But somehow, the sand no longer flows. He stretches and feels no pain in his back. You know something, he thinks to himself? I think I'll go for a nice long ride tomorrow.
Thank you.
Most radio shows don't come with a demonstration. But most radio shows aren't Radio Wonderland.
Greatest hits.
Right, so then I take more pieces of live radio, slice them, fit them into the groove, and then in a few minutes you get something like...
In LA, some restrictions apply.
It's radio made completely out of radio. I'm Joshua, but you just call me Radio Wonderland.
10:30 a.m. Saturday mornings till 11.
Some restrictions apply.
You sound a little taller on radio.
We thought we would take a listen to what's going on in the community on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, where you can add your own event and hear it read on the radio and seen around the world at WGXC.org in the community calendar. Just click on add an event and add away. Fill in the blanks and you'll hear it soon. Saturday, May 20th, the Christ Church Episcopal Parish Hall in Hudson has a spring affair from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. with a sale of baked goods, homemade soups, jewelry, toys, plants, knickknacks, and more. Also Saturday, May 20th, Oakdale Rewilding is going on, a volunteer day at Oakdale Park in Hudson to plant native trees along the Oakdale Trail. That's from 10 a.m. to 12:30. There's also a spring wildflower walk Saturday, May 20th at the Eldridge Research Center in Rensselaerville at 10 a.m. Clyverack resident Eric Frazier is a renowned bansuri player, kind of wooden flute. He's performing with some friends at 3 p.m. Saturday, May 20th at the First Presbyterian Church in Hudson. That's 369 Warren Street, just above the WGXC Hudson studio. There's also a classical ensemble led by Ghent resident Gilly Melamedlev. 4 to 6 p.m. at the Tideman Farm in Germantown, Saturday, May 20th.